Okay.
Okay, I am with Mr.
Floyd Fuller.
Good, and it
Randolph Center, Vermont.
And it's March
26, 1992.
And you had your 90th birthday November 8th.
92 hadn't come in. 1991, you're right. Yeah, and I was 90 years old.
Well, I was interested in maybe starting with some of your early memories on Fuller Hill. And Earl had told me a story about how, I guess it was your grandfather first came up there looking for hemlock. Was that the story?
Well, no, I don't remember, but I know my grandfather came up there. It's known now as there's signs in Warren Village. It says Fuller Hill. They put them in here just a few years ago. But up until just a few years ago, there'd been Fullers live on that hill since way back in 1840-something. My grandfather came and from down New Hampshire and settled up under the top of the hill there where my dad was born. And I think it was 1844. And then my dad was born up there. And my dad, when he was older and got married, bought the farm down three-quarter of a mile this side, down toward the village, and moved there in 1882. And that's where we were all born. And so that's the Fullers. My niece retired from a telephone office in Burlington. Probably Earl told you about the hospital in Burlington. She was a telephone operator, and she worked out. She retired, and then she started getting the genealogy of the Fuller family. And she worked hard, and then she kidneys gave out with her, and she passed away before she got a finished, but she got several generations.
That was Ruth.
Ruth.
Yeah. Well, I talked with Ruth.
Oh, did you?
She died. Yeah.
So,
and you were always a favorite.
See, the Fullers came from over, she probably told you, from England, way back, and some of them settled in New Hampshire, and some of them in Ipswich, Mass, and all around. And so I've got that. Whatever she got done, I got a copy of it. But so that is. But as I probably told you, my brother, next to oldest Lawrence, spent his whole life more, and he never left. He stayed there on the farm with Dad, and then bought Dad out, and then stayed there, and then he finally sold it out last year, and moved down to put where the sugar bush is. And he was slick man, probably you got that too. He was slick man and Warren for 21 years.
I'd forgotten that.
And he was the one that showed this Mr. Gadd the land up in there, what they've got now is a sugar bush ski business. And that Mr. Gadd, my brother then, was living right there at the foot of where they turned to go up to the ski toe. And he boarded there for a while looking it over, and he was only 32 years old, multimillionaire, and he bought that all the land up in there and opened up that ski development.
Now, one story I heard recently was that Lauren had said to him, "I'll take you up and show you my sugar bush." Is that true? And that was how Sugar Bush got its name.
Well, I don't know. I don't remember, but I know Lauren took him up. He got me now looking around, and somebody referred him to Lauren because Lauren was one of the slick men, and he'd also been a lister at times in Warren, and he knew all the. He was fire warden. He knew all the farms up in there and whoever owned them, that like. And he took him up there and showed him around, and he ended up buying it.
Well,
yeah. So it's quite a story. Now, it's unbelievable. Of course, I knew all those little farms when I was growing up. And now they had the farm up in there because it's all taken up. And one of the farms, which you probably heard about it, is a golf course made out of it. And there's a small dairy farm, now it's a golf course.
Yeah, who owned that?
Alan. Name is Alan.
There's a a guy that lived near there that I can't think of his name right now, who is still alive and living in Brownsville. But I don't think his name is Alan. And then the Irishes were up in there.
Oh, yeah. And I say, I can't think of, I can't think of names quick when I want to. But, Alan, of course, I went to school with the Alan girls. And, but that farm, as I say, been put into a golf course. And another place, some Pattisons lived up in there. And, well, probably you, maybe nobody ever told you, but when I got to be 13 and 14, I was playing a violin. And I'm the only one of the boys that ever amounted to anything playing the violin. Earl Nor never tried it. My older brother Clarence did, but he didn't stick to anything anyway. And so I was the one that continued. And I started playing for Kitchen Junkets when I was 13 years old and played for the Grange Entertainment. And later on, a little older, once in a while they'd have a dance in the Warrentown Hall. And just, we didn't have an orchestra or form or anything, but they'd pick up, going to have a dance. They wanted to dance instead of being in somebody's house, we'll have a big dance, a kind of a bigger dance. So we'd pick up a different, get an orchestra together. And Georgia Patterson had lived up in there, played the trumpet. And he used to play with me for dances. And he and his brother, they had a farm up in there, a dairy farm. And now that farm, is a big restaurant there in the barn where that farm was.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. So I used to play in the town hall for, play the violin for dancing, and for, I played for a number of years in the wintertime. Every Friday night, the last few years that I lived at home, I left home when I was 21. In the wintertime, Professor Only Entertainment Belt, they didn't have any movies or anything then, and they'd have a dance in somebody's house on a Friday night. They got to hold them Friday night, because back then, if you had a dance Saturday night, when midnight come, you couldn't dance any longer. They always stopped. Now they don't matter. The Sabbath don't mean anything to many people today. But so they used to hold them Friday nights. And Belt, pretty near every week, I'd be going to somebody's house if the weather was good. And they'd move all the stuff out of the house and everything, pile it up, and they'd dance the kitchen and dining room and living room. And Mrs. Bashaw was one that used to go in most every place we went either had a piano and organ. And all the music they had was the organ, the piano, and me with the violin, which was enough for in the house. And Mrs. Somerville, her daughter, I think, is still alive over in the East Warren now. But Mrs. Somerville used to go some and play. But the one that went with me most was Mrs. Bashaw. And she used to go, we went together a lot. And we'd start dancing at 9 o'clock. And they'd call us up and tell us where it was going to be. And we'd get there, both to play from 9 to 1. And around a little before 11, quarter 11 or so, they'd hold up, have a time for lunch. And in the fall, it'd be homemade donuts and cider, and all the neighbors would bring in beautiful lunch. Then they'd go dance at 1. Well, quite often, 1 o'clock, before 1 o'clock, I mean, having so much fun, somebody would pass their hat around, and they'd get dimes and nickels thrown in, and they'd dump it, come along, dump it on the organ and piano, and say, "We passed the hat around, will you play another hour?" Well, that meant to play till 2. And quite often, well, not all the time, but quite often, they'd do pass it again, and then we'd play till 3 o'clock in the morning. And we got $1.50 pay for each one of them for playing from 9 to 1. And then we'd divide up some. And I know one night, I remember we were out in Wakefield Common, and we played till 3 o'clock. And each one of us had $2.65 apiece. And we thought we had quite a lot of money. And we played from 9 till 3 o'clock in the morning. And I was at least 12 miles from home. And it was down to zero, a little bit below, at 3 o'clock in the morning. But everybody's all good. And I used to take my violin, because the cold weather and temperature are bad, had in the case. I used to wrap it up in a blanket, put it under the sleigh seat, and drive home. And I had a black horse. I'd drive in, and sometimes when I got home and the breath of that horse, it's half past four in the morning when I drove into part of him. The frost on his hair, he looked like a white horse. And I'd put him in the barn, go up and change my clothes, and Dad and Lauren would be going to the barn to milk. And I'd go up and change my clothes, go to the barn, go to milk, and I'd go to bed tall. But the next night I was ready to go to sleep.
Oh, I bet. Well, now, did your father play the violin?
Yeah.
Because I remember, I think Earl told me he also made, did he make violins?
Well, he made his first violin, and then he later made a half-size violin for Pearlie, the boy. They never adopted him, but he went by the name of Pearlie Fuller, but he was quite musical, Pearlie was, and he was a little kid, and Dad made a half-size violin for Pearlie. And it was a good little, I even played on that. And then later on, Dad gave it to Pearlie. And I wish I knew where it was, because it was a beautiful little violin. But Dad made his first violin. But he didn't know one note from another. They say he didn't know a note from a donut.
No kidding.
But he played by ear. And so, well.
So did you learn from your father?
Well, no. This is, to me, is kind of interesting to tell what I did, because I think I accomplished something. But anyway, my older brother, Claren, was 4 years older. And Claren and I had lessons on the organ, on them organs that you pedal and you got sound. And they give us a lesson. The teacher used to come to your house and stay and give you a lesson. Well, we both took lessons on the organ. So I learned the notes. And then Claren got the idea that he could play it, and Dad wanted him to learn to play the violin. So he had him take some lessons. Well, I was too small and too young to take lessons on the violin because my arm was too short. So they thought. But a little, determination. Anything Claren could do, I made up my mind I could do it. So after he had his first lesson, our teacher had gone that like, I don't remember just how old it was, but don't matter. I went in and took it on Dad's violin. And I got the violin out, and my mother informed me that I couldn't play the violin and I wasn't big enough. I said, I'm going to play the violin. I said, if he can do it, I can do it. But she said, you've got to wait a while. And I said, no, I said, I'm going to take it. Well, I was sawing around, and you can make a horrible noise. So she shut me into the living room, so she couldn't hear me. And I sawed around and squeaked and squalled around. My arm didn't bend any, but I can remember it. And I said, well, I don't know what the notes are, but my little head told me to sit down to the organ, put the head of the violin on the A, and pedal it. And I got the A tone as long as I pedaled, held the key down. So then, from that, I kept sawing them around, and I found the second string was A. He carded with it without putting any fingers on it. Well, I said, that's... So then I put my first finger on the A string and raised the head of the violin up onto the next key, which is B, and it carded. And I found him raised up the next one was C, and then a second finger. And that's the way I taught myself what the notes were on the violin. And so then I got so I could play his lesson just as well as he did when the teacher come. But I never took a lesson. I just taught myself to play that way.
How old were you at this point?
Oh, I was probably, let's see, I was about 7 or 8.
That's terrific.
And so I got to play it, and then from that, of course, Dad used to get his old violin out in the evening, and I used to get down, and I learned to play all them old square dance tunes, Fisher hornpipe, and of course, Jig and all those old Zip Coon from watching, set side of him and watch him, and I could pick it up, and I got so old, so we used to play together. And play, the two of us played together, we had a lot of good time. And in 19, well, see, I was, let me think just a minute, I was 10 years old. Yeah. I was when I was small, I had a lot of sick spell and couldn't go to school. And I don't know, I was sick with a grip or something. But Dad sent and bought a nice violin for me. And it came while I was sick of bed with a grip or something. And I've got a scar, and I'll show it to you later, that I made, because I tried to do something in bed, and when I put it in the case, I didn't get it quite in, and the cover came down and made a mark on the top of the violin, which I felt pretty bad about. But that violin is, well, at least 80 years old.
Do you still play?
Well, not much. I got arthritis in my finger. That finger, I can't. Sometimes I can double it, sometimes I can't get it, go down and hit the key. When the grandchildren come, I get it out and try to play a little tune for them. But, so that violin has been with me ever since I was a little kid, about 10 years old. And that's what I've used to play for all those dances and that like.
Did you used to sing as well?
No.
Because there are a number of songs. Now, Art Hartshorne used to make up songs.
Oh, yeah. He was musical. He played a trumpet, and he wrote quite a few pieces of music.
Yeah. Do you know whatever happened to that?
I have no idea.
Because I was looking for it, because it would be wonderful
to put it together. I don't know where they went. I don't know where it went.
Would you have any ideas where I should start looking?
Let me think a minute. Give me a little time. Some of the relatives that are still... his brother's daughter.
Kit
is still alive.
I've talked with her. She has a couple of pieces, but not many.
And she is on the Bell side. I think, that the Murrays.
Now, I talked with her, and...
Of course, May Murray and Weston are both passed away, but he was alive when Art and Bell passed away. And now they was pretty close, Bell and Art and May and Weston. And at one time, the one that Art bought that land of and that farm, they were real close. Then later on, I don't know what happened, and they didn't have anything to do with each other. Hmm. And maybe you heard this before, you could...
No.
Cause, well, when Arthur made, when he made out a will, and he passed away, in that will, it was read, he had it mentioned in there, no, on your word, that he didn't know, what is it, Murray's, all the orders. Oh gosh, I knew him well. Anyway, I don't owe him one damn red cent. And he had it in his will. They had some problem or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't hate me. But somewhere in there, I think some of the Murrays, not like, sort of picked the house, cleaned up the stuff in the house, and I don't know where the stuff went.
Because he wrote the Yellow Painted Hack, I think.
Yeah. And he was clever. Artron was clever, and musical and clever. And if you'd ever known him, that fella was a keen fella. And, you know, he understood the Bible as well as any minister you ever listened to.
Exactly.
That's right. And boy, he could recite things like that. And I don't know what Earl ever told you one time at in legislature in Montpelier. They were trying to get a bill through that they couldn't, what was it? Oh, play games and things on Sunday, ball games and some of the cats would get in through. And he went to one of the open me hearings in the legislature. And I guess he got up and this was, he told me and talked to him, and he told the ministers there and that like he didn't want any, have any fun on Sunday night like. He said, if you'd preach and have your sermons as interesting as a ball game is, he said, you'd get a bigger attendance. And he raved on and he quoted things out of the Bible to them. And they said after the meeting, where he had more ministers around talking to him. And but he could repeat the Bible.
Well, tell me a little bit about your farm. How big a farm was it that your father had?
Well, when he first went there, probably maybe Earl told you, I don't know.
Well, we always talked about it, but I never got, you know, specific.
Well, when Dad and Mother got married in 1882, probably Earl told you, they were married the 3rd of March. And believe it or not, they were married over in Starksboro. And they had to go over Lincoln Mountain with a horse and buggy on the 3rd day of March.
Holy smokes.
And I heard Dad and Mother tell about it was a rough ride because it had to winter and that like it thawed off and had this thawing and rutted the dirt road and didn't have the gravel on them to have now and rut, and then it froze up. And I guess it was a rough buggy ride over Lincoln Mountain to go over to Starkboro while they was married. Well, then they bought, they bought the farm before they got married from a fellow by name of Severy. And it was a small farm, keep, probably 8 cows and a horse or something like that. And you've seen the picture of the old house, of course. And I don't know how many years it was, but Fred Cardell lived towards the village, Warren Village, just a quarter of a mile down the road, and that's why that house was taken down and moved up there. He bought Fred Cardell after a few years. And then a few years later, this side from here, this side from the turn, where my Aunt Carrie and Uncle Lorenzo Arvis lived, which was my mother's sister and husband, and they bought them out, and they moved over to Starksboro. And they had that, so that made 3 farms into one. And then in, I don't know what year it was, the John Cardle farm, which was, around the road was 3/4 of a mile and cross lots 1/2 mile, with a beautiful sugar place on it. John Cardle and Dan Cardle, his son, lived there alone, and when he passed away, they had to have a administrator and that like, and so the thing was going to be sold and put up on sealed bids. And I remember hearing Dad tell about it, and he kicked him. John Lovett, who was a neighbor, wanted to buy that farm to, because it didn't join him, but wanted to buy it to make his place bigger. And so he put a bid in the sealed envelope, and John Spalding, I think, was the administrator. But anyway, John put a bid in of $500 for that farm. Dad put a bid in the sealed envelope for $505, and he got the farm. And John Lovett, I heard Dad say, was pretty mad because he got that farm for $5 more. And there was a beautiful sugar place. You could hang 1,000 buckets in that woods. There was only one other tree in the woods. Every tree was maple except one, which was up in the northeast corner. There was an elm tree, but every other tree in that sugar bush was maples. And some of it laid so smooth, Dad used to drive around there with his old Model T Ford.
Is that?
And we could hang 1,000 buckets there. And I've got a picture here I'll show you, maybe you haven't got, of the old sugar house.
Oh, I'd love to see it, yeah.
I took over 2 or 3 years ago, took some people, I've taken a lot of people over there. I boiled sap in that sugar house with an old Bellisol evaporator when I was 12 years old. And I want to tell you, them was lonesome days, believe it or not. Mother packing up a lunch, when at that time, you see, he had that sugar plate and he had the one to home. So he had to, Dad poured up to home, and my boys, brothers, gathered the sap, and they had hired help too. And of course, them old fashioned evaporators, flat pan, that like didn't boil so fast. So they'd gather the sap over there and fill up a storage tank full like this afternoon. I'd go over there tomorrow, and tomorrow they'd be gathering up there. They didn't have to come back because I had sap enough to last me. And so I'd pack my little lunch, go half a mile across lots over there, and I'd fire that thing from first thing after breakfast until dark, and boil sap there all day long alone. And I tell you, 12 years old, nobody to speak to and that like, and I used to look out the window to see if any movement was going over home. I could look over home. But I bore a sap in that old, and I don't know for the life of me what's keeping that sugar house. It still stands there, and that sugar house is lots over 100 years old, and it still stands. The last time I went over, I went up and I didn't go into it because I didn't dare, but it still stands up there. No, it hadn't been anything done to it for years and years, and why that thing don't cave in, I don't know.
And nobody sugars there at
no,
all?
No, of course, no other buildings there. They're all gone. And it's being built up. There's several houses over there in the sugar house now. I go over there on the old road, get over there. I don't know where I am hardly. It's houses, people living there. And so, but it's quite a incident. And the house burned, I forget what year it was. I left home in 1922. And my wife's sister and her husband was up there, I don't know what, probably 1924 or 1925.
Your father's house burned?
No, the one over that to the Dan Cardinal, where the sugar house was. You see, this may not line up good, but I'll tell you how I happened to get acquainted with my wife. Was, maybe Merle might have told you that.
No.
Well, Bell was a girl, Bell.
Yeah.
Atkins married Arthur Hartshorn.
Yes.
And Belle, I don't know, remember what happened to her folks, but they took her and brought her up. Never adopted her, but they brought her up. And Gertrude, my wife, Gertrude Neal, she was Eugenia Davis. She lived there in Warren, which she had a lot of aunts lived there. She was a girl. But she and Belle went to school together.
Uh-huh.
And they were great friends. And most every weekend, my folks, Dad, and they always had a lot of people come stay there. They'd take anybody in and always had. Anyway, Belle and Gina was almost like sisters. Little kids growing up and going to school together. And then later on, Gertrude's mother, something happened to her folks. And when she was, I think, 16 or 17, she went to Lowell, Massachusetts, Lynn, Massachusetts, to live with her older sister, which was married and had a business down there. So she went to Lynn to live, because her folks had passed away, her aunts and uncles lived there. But anyway, she landed in Lynn and worked out and so on and so forth. And after a while, she married Fred Neal. And he was several years older and was kind of a bachelor, but anyway, a wonderful man. And so he was a shoe cutter, and a wonderful shoe cutter, and a pattern. He used to last of his shedding shoes. All he did was cut the pattern shoes. He was that good. So anyway, she'd been there, and she had two girls, Mildred and Gertrude, which was Gertrude was later my wife. And then Mildred's 5 years older. She lives over on I sold her some land on my farm died on, and I helped them, they built a house, and she still lives there. She's 94 years old.
What's her name, Mildred?
Mildred Rippon. Well, so this is kind of interesting, and is when Gertrude was about 3 years old and Mildred was about eight, Gertrude's mother wrote up to, they used to correspond back and forth. I was a young kid, I didn't know anything about it, but I knew they did, Christmas time, that like. So Gertrude's mother rode up, and it was in the summertime, and asked, she said, I'd like to come back and visit.